Okay, we're going to take your phone calls and your stories. Keith Johnson with us, the paranormalist, and he's next on Coast to Coast AM. Keith, let's revive that story. You were talking about being at some kind of convention or something?
Yes, Sandra and I were at a convention, and we happened to meet Linda Blair, of course, the star of The Exorcist.
Uh-huh.
She was a very young girl, and she asked us what we were into. We were trading stories, and she asked us what we were into, and we said we're into demonology. And she, while we're talking, this strange expression came over her, and she looked back and forth at Sandra and I, and finally she said, "But you guys look so clean." And we realized that she expected us. We said demonology. We're supposed to have all these body illustrations and body piercings and spiked hair and everything. And we said, no. That's, you know, it's not, we don't summon demons. That what we do is we try to help educate people, and we work in the study of demonology to try to help people who are oppressed with this. And she, okay. Then she understood, but she had never heard that term before. So sometimes just saying the term demonology or demonologist can conjure up, so to speak, the wrong idea. Sure, so yeah. We try to be very explicit when we explain it.
Keith, earlier you said that you thought the demons were winning. What makes you think that?
I think it's an increase in activity, and people are becoming more and more blinded to these things. There's so much about it in the media that it seems to be kind of glossed over now. It doesn't have the stigma that it used to. People see shows and TV shows, they think that's exactly what they're like, and that's, they become experts in it. I do believe demonic activity is on the increase, and plus spirit communication. And again, of course, the Bible warns about deceptive spirits, and that someday that they will be most of the world will be deceived. But even now, through spirit boxes, people communicate with these spirits and just assume that they're talking to a benevolent spirit. They're talking to a spirit that is what it claims to be. They're talking to a good spirit. But these things do possess the wisdom of the ages, and they can, I mean, they're so deceptive. You can't second-guess them. They're masters of imitation. And so people accept it at face value. And I think that is very much on the increase. And plus, there are spirits that govern. There are spirits that are very much in control. And the Bible speaks of this, too, in principalities. In the book of Daniel, the angel Gabriel had a message for the prophet Daniel. It took that angel Gabriel 3 weeks to get the snatches of cross because it was being oppressed by a demonic spirit called the Prince of Persia. The Prince of Persia was preventing Gabriel from giving the prophet Daniel the message until the archangel Michael intervened on Gabriel's behalf. So angels and demons do work together.
Will they always work together?
Demons do not like to work together, but if they have to, they will. They'll work. Yes, I've seen that in a case of possession. My brother and I were at an exorcism where it was a female exorcist, and suddenly she went under possession. She had her own familiar spirit. She went under possession, so these demons were working together. Suddenly she fell back. And she sat up, and it was a totally different person, a totally different voice. And that took the attention away of what we were there for. We were there to cast out the spirit of her 14-year-old nephew. So I have seen them work together in that way.
Keith, didn't you go investigating vampires? Weren't you a vampire hunter for a little bit?
In a manner of speaking, yes, because Rhode Island is known, New England in general, but especially Rhode Island, is known for its vampire legends. And that goes back to early America, and in the past couple of centuries, people had a belief in vampirism where if somebody was dying of tuberculosis or some other malady that was not curable at the time, they believed it was a spiritual disease, that a spirit had infected the body of the recently deceased and was coming back to take the life force of sleeping relatives. And that was they had repeated exhumations back in the 18th and 19th centuries in New England, where family members would exhume their loved ones, look for an incorruptible. If somebody wasn't properly decayed, they had to do a ritual where they cut out the heart and burned it, sometimes feeding the ashes to an ailing family member. And that went on for some time. So I've researched this in detail. There was one modern one, though. There was one modern one back in the 1970s. And she called herself Lilith, of course, after the deity of the spirit Lilith, mythological spirit. And she would wait outside of cemeteries dressed all in black and very enticing. In the middle of the night, some, you know, a bunch of young guys would go by intoxicated on a weekend night, and they'd see this young woman sitting, teenage girls, actually sitting on the cemetery wall. They'd come to talk to her, and suddenly she put the bite on them. And this is true. She really would.
Okay, let's take some calls here for you as they line up, Keith, and then we'll continue chatting with you about some of the things you're doing, because you do make some appearances, you and your wife, Sandra, around the country. Let's go to Michael in Los Angeles to get us started. Michael, thanks for calling. Go ahead.
Yeah, hi.
Hi there.
I just want to tell you, I am a Roman Catholic, and I am a layman who is an exorcist.
Perfect.
Oh.
And I was just wondering, when did you start?
I started in this field back when I was a teenager, back when I was 17 years old. I had a lot of learning to do. I made a lot of mistakes, of course, along the way. But thank God I have not been seriously injured. And I've been against nothing, no situation that I couldn't handle by the grace of God. But that's when I started, when I was very young.
Well, I actually found out that Catholic laymen who have the sacrament of confirmation can do exorcisms. I found that out in 1990 after I did research with a priest who was a personal friend of John Paul II, who met him in 1938 in Poland. He was one of the guys that mentored him into the priesthood. And he was a very old priest, and he had two doctorates, one in moral theology, one in dogmatic theology. He was brilliant and never would have made the breakthrough of finding out, you know, that Catholic laymen who are confirmed can do exorcisms. And I've had eight bishops tell me I'm correct. Two of them were archbishops, but they won't teach it.
Why not?
Have you run into that experience?
Are they afraid of it?
Well, the bishop told me when I said, why won't you teach it? This is a quote I'll never forget. He said, we do not want you, meaning laity, to know that you have this tremendous authority and power. Period.
Huh.
And so they talk about, you know, we can do a deliverance, you know, they'll give way on that. That's something fairly recent. But they say that we can't do an exorcism. And I told them, I said, well, you know, I've been doing them. But they admitted to me, yes, I was correct, but they wouldn't teach it. I mean, each one, in his own way, admitted that I was correct, because if they said I was wrong, they'd be denying the Holy Spirit and what he did at Pentecost with the fiery tongues.
Michael, when you were participating in some of these exorcisms, did you ever get hurt or feel like you were going to?
I was only struck one time, and that was a time when I decided I wasn't going to do anything. I knew this person was possessed, and they were walking down the street, and I was behind them, and I said, I'm just going to walk by, and I'm not going to say anything. I'm not going to do anything. I'm just going to walk by and not do anything and see if that's the way God wants me to handle it. And because I was thinking, well, you know, I'm doing so many exorcisms and finding out, seeing that so many people are possessed, maybe I'm overdoing it, maybe I'm pushing this.
Right.
So I didn't say anything as I walked by, and I got about 30 feet ahead of this woman, and she started screaming bloody murder. Why are you hurting us? Why are you chasing us? Why are you, you know, calling us out? What? It just started screaming. You could hear her a block away. And so, of course, I had to do exorcisms.
Okay, well, thanks for sharing that with us, Michael. I appreciate that. Keith, and in your case, I mean, is it possible that an exorcist can get possessed doing what they do?
Yes, I do believe that they are in danger of becoming possessed. I've seen that happen. If the person is not spiritually grounded, spirits will work together, and they will look for any opening. It is possible. It's rare, but it does happen. It is possible, yes.
You know, I spent a lot of time in St. Louis, having moved there in 1979. And I almost got the priest who was in the real exorcism of that little boy that they did the movie, The Exorcist. And he just didn't want to talk to the media, and then he died. But God, that would have been a classic interview, wouldn't it?
That would have been. That would have been a wonderful interview. That would have been a timeless interview.
Yeah.
And because that is, as some people do know, it is based on a true story that took place in St. Louis in 1949. And none of the priests were killed, but one of them did receive a broken nose. But it is based on an actual account, yes.
Let's go to Ontario, Canada now. Lawrence is with us. Hi, Lawrence. Thank you for calling.
Hey, when I was a child, hey, nice to hear you guys.
You too.
Anyways, when I was a child, I started out with, I've seen demon faces in the window of the bedroom, and none of us boys could sleep in my grandmother's house.
I don't blame you.
We were there. So.
How about in the mirror, Lawrence? Did you ever see something in a mirror?
Can you call me Wolfman? That's my actual.
I'll call you that if I knew it, Wolfman.
Okay. Well, yeah, that's what everyone calls me. Anyways, in the mirror, in the dresser, yes, I saw faces in the mirror, and the mirror would actually turn like a silver, like cloudy.
All right, and Keith, we get a lot of stories and reports of faces in mirrors. Have you come across that?
I have not, but my brother has. That's my brother's one fear. My brother's greatest fear when going into demonically infested houses is that he's going to walk up to a mirror and he's going to see somebody standing right there behind him. That's his greatest personal fear.
It happens.
Yes,
it happens.
It does happen.
What is it about the mirror that allows these demons, these creatures, to be able to be seen?
Because they can manifest in reflections. They mostly manifest as shadow figures, but they will be very, very deceptive. You'll see them out of your peripheral vision, and sometimes you'll glimpse them in a reflection, like a mirror, a flat surface, or there'll be a shadow person. But, they are very sneaky that way. They rarely manifest right in front of you, because then that's giving their presence away.
I sometimes thought that the demon in the mirror might have been within the human being who was looking in the mirror, that it was inside of him and it somehow comes out that way.
That's very possible. Of course, there's the doppelganger too. And Abraham Lincoln looked in a mirror and saw his doppelganger, saw himself as a corpse. He saw a vision of himself as a corpse. He went for a long walk, came back and looked again, and there was his vision of himself as a corpse. And that was very shortly before his assassination. But these mirror images are a reality.
He also had a dream, and as he was going into this rotunda area of the White House, all these soldiers were standing there, and people were weeping over a casket, and it was him.
Yes, he did have a premonition very, very shortly before his death. In fact, to his secretary, the last night, it was just before he was leaving for Ford's Theater where he was assassinated, his secretary said he always said goodnight to him, always said goodnight to him. That one night he did not say goodnight. So his secretary said, Mr. President, goodnight. Abraham Lincoln turned around, smiled, and said goodbye and left for the last time.
Let's go to David in Harlington, Texas now on the wild card line. Hey, David, good morning.
Good morning, George.
Good to have you
How
with
are
us.
You?
Good.
I can't believe I'm actually on. I'm a huge fan of yours.
Well, thank you so much.
Keith, I have a question for you. What's it called? Since I got back from Iraq, I went to a VA hospital, VA clinic, and I told them about these symptoms, and they told me it's nothing more than sleep paralysis. It's just my imagination. It's just stress. But one thing that I don't agree with is that this thing, whatever it is, it shapeshifts. It shapeshifts. I'm laying there. I can't move. I can't talk. And it'll take the form like the silhouette of my fiance or the silhouette of my brother. And I try to call out to them. And this has happened more than two times. And it just goes back into this tall shadow person that comes close to me.
What's happening to him, Keith?
I think because of the stress and trauma, he may be more sensitive than the average person, and the spirits could be manifesting themselves. Of course, there are, and God bless him. God bless him for defending our country. There could be medical problems, psychological, certain psychological malady that is doing this, but also spiritual as well, because you can have the psychological maladies along with the spiritual. So spiritual counseling, special prayer should be said for him, and I think that could help as well.
And what about in terms of cleansing? Will that help?
I think that will help if a special prayer and blessing is done over him. That might help dispel these spirits who are tormenting him. Obviously, they're using loved ones and a shadow person to get at him. They will use an emotional attachment sometimes to get at a person, but it can't hurt. The spiritual intervention can't hurt. It can only do good. So along with the medical treatment, spiritual should be combined.
David, if you need any assistance, let us know. We'll try to get some people who live in your area to help you out.
I'll definitely look into that, but this thing has talked to me before. I've tried to say you're not real. I've tried to cast it out, and it said it is real.
Did it just happen when you came back, or was it happening all along?
It's been happening over the course of 4 years now, and it really freaks me out because I try to repel it. I try to tell myself it's just a dream. I'm just imagining this, and it says it's real.
All right, Keith, I think Dave needs some help, assistance with this thing, like fast. So what does he do?
Well, he can contact, if he contacts, there's a lot of help on the internet. Anybody who's seriously involved in this can see that he gets help, and you can contact anybody that has, look up spiritual deliverance. If you look up in a search engine, spiritual deliverance, there is a wealth of information where he can get help. I personally am going to be intervening. I will pray for him. I'll have my team members pray for him, church members. So there is a tremendous amount of power in prayer, especially group prayer, tremendous amount of power. So we'll start the ball rolling.
Good.
And if he wants to contact me or John Zaffis, any one of us, we'll be glad to try to help.
And also, David, tomorrow night in our second half of the show, Bill Bean will be with us, a minister who does some of this work. We'll give you as much help as we can find for you. So make sure you're listening to that part of the show, too. And call in. We'll make an exception and let you call in as well on that one. Keith, you do travel. You do make appearances. What's up next for you?
Well, our newest thing, thing coming up is going to be Ocean State Paracon. Sandra and I are going to appear at Ocean State Paracon. That's in Harrisville, Rhode Island.
Sounds
at the
fun.
Assembly
I
Theater.
Like that. Or is that on your website?
Yes. Yes, you can see that on my website. It is right on my website, Ocean State Paracon. The proceeds are going into autism research. It's a very, very worthy cause. I myself have an autistic son, so that's the 19th and 20th.
Great. Keith, we're going to come back and take final phone calls with you right here on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to our final segment. Keith Johnson with us. Keith, why do you think there is such tremendous interest in the paranormal, specifically demonology?
It has taken off, obviously, since The Exorcist came out in 1973 and the book came out in 1969. There's been a tremendous interest in this field. It's gotten more and more attention over the years. And, of course, now you get TV programs about it all the time. It's really an explosion of interest, which is well and good. But as long as the true path is being shown that these spirits are potentially very dangerous, and I think people tend to overlook that, how dangerous this field can be, how dangerous these spirits are, that they are actual beings with a great amount of intelligence, and they're really out to do us harm. They really are. I've had a close friends who have gone through a nightmare in their childhood and become stronger people for this. Yeah. Obviously, my friend Bill Bean. Bill Bean is a good friend of mine.
Oh, is he? Okay, he's on with me tomorrow night. You heard that. So.
Oh, yes, yes. He's wonderful. He went through a total nightmare. My friend Tim Yancey. Tim Yancey went through literal hell in his upbringing because of these spirits and abusive relationships, but he became a stronger person for it. So people do tend to, they acquire this tremendous faith, and they become stronger people sometimes because of it. Bill's an example. Tim's an example. So it's not always an unhappy ending.
You have talked about prayer. We've talked about prayer. It does work. I mean, we've got like a Friday prayer list, Keith, where people pray for people who are afflicted with something. And I've had some uncanny results here. Why do you believe prayer works? And when you pray, who are we praying to?
Well, myself, we're praying for a higher power. We're praying to a higher power that watches over us. Of course, I pray to God. I pray to God's son, Jesus, being of the Christian faith. But we are praying to a higher power, and there is such a positive energy when you pray, especially as a group, in community prayer and group prayer. There is such positive energy. I mean, obviously, plants even respond to prayer, to positive energy. It's the opposite of the negative energy. And, of course, the demonic spirits, that's the antithesis of positive. So that's what we do in house blessings. We try to dispel the negative energy, replace it with positive energy. So prayer is very, very powerful. Group prayer, even more powerful. And we are praying to a higher power.
All right, back to the phones. Final phones. We're going to go out to the Big Island of Hawaii on the Kona side. Jake is with us. Hey, Jake, go ahead.
Hi, George.
Howdy.
Hey, Keith.
Good to have you with us.
Hello.
Yes, can you hear me?
Yep.
Yes.
You know, Keith, my daughter, she had what we thought was a nightmare about 2 months ago, where a hand was holding her down. It came through the wall, and she woke up 3 o'clock in the morning screaming. She's 12 years old, and when she woke up, she said she was holding on to the arm, and so, you know, we played it off as a nightmare, and I'd say in the recent 3 weeks, she says now she's hearing voices talking to her, and you know, she's just a wreck, and I don't know where to start, really. And I work on the golf course till 1 o'clock in the morning. When I came home one morning, one of my other daughters, who's only 5 years old, was standing in the hallway looking down the living room. And she said, I asked her, what is she doing? And she said she was looking at grandma. And there is no grandma in our house. And so we're suspecting that's what's going on. I'm suspecting that's what's going on. My wife thinks she's having an anxiety attack. And, you know, Keith, I really don't know where to start.
I think there was a grandma in the house. Keith, what do you think?
There could be benevolent spirits watching over her. There could be angelic spirits watching over here that appear as grandma too. It could be either way. But one unfortunate aspect is children are very, very sensitive, much more sensitive than adults on the average. So they actually see these things. That's why the spirits will appear to them. That's why they're vulnerable and sometimes the target. Most of the time, children will grow out of this sensitivity. They'll naturally grow out of it, so this will taper off. However, they're at a very vulnerable stage when they're young, so special prayer should be said to them, and that's what Sandra and I do. When we have a child in a family that is being oppressed, we say very, very special prayer. We remind them that they have angels watching over them. Jesus, of course, loved the little children, and so we do say that special prayer, especially for children. That they will be protected. And usually it's a natural process they grow out of, fortunately.
Oh, good. Yeah, she hasn't slept in so long, and you know, she's usually not afraid of anything. So, you know, we're just worried. But thank you, Keith. Thank you.
Okay, you're welcome.
You're very welcome.
Enjoy the Big Island. Gorgeous place that is. Let's go to Randy Oshkosh, Wisconsin, on the wild card line. Randy, you're up.
Hey, George. Hey, Keith. How you doing tonight?
Good.
Hey, listen. I mean, this is fascinating. This program tonight, and we just had Dave Schrader Saturday night with
the Conjuring people.
Yeah, the Conjuring case, and then we got Bill Bean coming up. I said, this is really great stuff.
Feels like Halloween, doesn't it?
it is. Here's a question. I believe this was on Paranormal Witness. It was an episode. It was called The Tenant, about the Chicago house that a young couple had purchased, and they discovered there was all kinds of demonic, all kinds of bizarre activity going on. They even had another young couple, renters, in the house who were there for a time, and then they had to leave because there was so many kind of weird things going on. And I believe at the time, this is the early 70s, where they had brought in the media. It was a TV. It was being recorded where there was somebody had brought in a medium to try to make contact with one of the negative forces that were in that house. And at the end, the epilogue was that the guy just had to, he practically gave the house away. I think it was like for $5 just to get out. In essence, they felt defeated. Do you remember anything, or do you know anything about the story?
I do not. How about you, Keith?
I believe I've seen that, and I've heard of that story. There are times where people will do anything to get out of a house and get away from this situation. Some houses are just so...
And you have to disclose it, too, don't you?
Oh, yes. Yeah, there is a rule now. Unfortunately, you have to ask. You do have to ask. They're not going to voluntarily give this information. But legally, they do have to disclose it. That's in many states, pretty much all over the country. You have to disclose it.
It's like, does your basement leak? It's the same thing.
Oh, yes. Yes, exactly. Exactly. And this is a reality. It's been proved. That law would not be on the books if these things did not happen, because it happens over and over. People move into a house. Usually it's not as severe as that case just mentioned. But sometimes you go into a house that's been infested. The thing wants to feed off of you. Sometimes it wants you out. And it can be a horrendous, horrendous situation. That's why I recommend whatever someone's faith is, that they have the place blessed when they first move into a house, even if it does not have a history. You can't do wrong by having the house blessed, introducing positive energy through prayer. Even if somebody does not have any basic spiritual beliefs, they can be very positive. That will dispel the negative energy if they live in a very, very life-giving, positive manner, as bright as possible, decorations, anything that's positive, a life-giving, a new baby in the home. So It does not hurt to have the place blessed.
What about a crucifix in the house?
A crucifix can have an effect if it's blessed. You know, it's just an ornament unless it's blessed. If it's blessed, it carries the holy vibrations. Sometimes a powerful spirit, a negative spirit, will attack that crucifix, turning it upside down, throwing it about. But then that takes intervention. The clergy has to come in, has to have group prayer and faith to dispel that negative spirit and that negative energy.
We go to Candace now in Ohio. Hi, Candace. Thanks for calling.
Hey, George. Good evening, gentlemen.
Hi.
And I just want to say I love your show, and I used to date Jim Morrison, so I love when I hear Jim on the radio.
That's great.
But anyway.
Is he still alive?
You know, who knows? But let me just run this by you, Keith, and see what your opinion is. In 1983, in my home up in Ohio, I live in Orlando now, but in Ohio, there appeared at my bedroom doorway in the middle of the afternoon a soldier a Union soldier. And it didn't scare me. And I said to him, "Welcome home." I don't know what made me say that, but I did. And he smiled. Later on, I talked to a psychic, and they said, well, it was because you were married to that person at one time. That's why it didn't scare you. That's why you felt familiar. But here's the deal. Years later, that was 1983. Years later, I'm down in Florida, and I act. That's what I do. I'm an actress. And I had an actor friend, and we just hit the ground running. We just got along. Everything was great. And maybe it was 2 years later, I just knew there was a familiarity about him, but I didn't know from where. Well, long story short, I ran across a picture, and for some reason, that just sparked what the familiarity was. And what it is that actor looks identical to the soldier that was in my doorway in the bedroom. Now, it couldn't have been him, because, well, not only not being a Union soldier, but he was born in 74. So my point is, in 83, he would have been a young kid. So it couldn't be him. but he's identical. It's him, as God is my witness. So what do you think about that? I mean, it's just been one of the weirdest things I've ever had happen in my life.
Huh.
Sometimes it's a great mystery. It's a great mystery why these things happen. But for some reason, some people are connected to somebody. They have this association with somebody from a past generation, and that person identifies with that person. Long as it's something positive and you're happy, I would just pray for whatever spirit manifestation it is. And you said, welcome home. Yes, that's great. Welcome home in the name of God. And as long as it's a positive experience, sometimes time overlaps. Very difficult to explain, but sometimes there are times when a Civil War soldier will appear and will see the other person as well. And then gone, you won't see them again. But yes, as long as it's a positive experience, I think you were meant to be. God brought you together, and that's just a reassurance, nothing to be afraid of.
It's John's turn now, Tulsa, Oklahoma. John, you're up with us. Go ahead.
Yeah, good evening, both of you.
You too, sir.
I just wanted to pass on a couple things. I've spoken to you before, George. I called in a couple years ago when Marianne Winkowski was on because we had some things happen around the house.
Uh-huh. Okay.
And she confirmed that there was a man spirit that was here almost all the time, and then a female spirit that would come and go. And funny part about it, I was in the back of the house on the phone, and other family members were in the living room and in the kitchen listening on the radio. And she mentioned that the man spirit was standing in the kitchen next to something with a bunch of papers and books. And my daughter and sister-in-law were standing right next to the microwave stand where there's shelves with cookbooks and papers, and both of them hightailed it out of the kitchen. My sister-in-law at times has seen, in fact, one time she was looking out the back window. It's like a bay window here in the kitchen. And then turned around to me because I was at the other end of the kitchen at the sink. And she said, did you walk across the room, you know, across the kitchen? I said, no, I haven't moved. She thought it was a reflection because it wasn't solid. It was like opaque. But it was that the same man that was described by Marianne Winkowski. My daughter has seen both spirits. My son has seen them both. And apparently I'm not very sensitive. The only thing I've ever encountered was being home alone, and I sleep a lot during the day because I work nights, and something bumped the bed real hard and woke me up, and there was no one home. Another time my son was home alone and getting a shower, and he said someone knocked, and it was a very clear, distinct knock on the bathroom door, and he got out of the shower and opened the door, and there's nobody there. He went through the house, nobody there. There hasn't been anything done maliciously. It's just every once in a while we see them or hear them. I think my daughter heard a female, and she said it was right in her ear. And like I said, it's never been malicious. It's just we know they're here, and it was verified by Marianne Winkowski.
I love that story. There are many stories like that, Keith.
Yes. Yes, many, many stories where people find out they're not alone in their house. There's something from a past generation occupying the house with them. And it's, as he said, it's not malicious. It's never harmed them. The only danger is if somebody tries to communicate with the spirits using a device, divination, such as a Ouija board, that can open up doors and let other spirits in, because there's already a weakness in the fabric, so to speak, that allows these spirits to come through. Communicating through a Ouija board can let something in that is not holy, is malicious, and can be dangerous. But as long as they're not in danger now, that's fine. They're doing good.
Is it the board, Keith, or the person? The person playing around with the planchette?
It's actually the person. The board itself has no power. But it's the fact that you're saying communicate through ourselves. In other words, you're putting your hand on the planchette. You're asking a spirit to manipulate you, and that's giving permission. That's opening up a door, giving a spirit permission to actually manipulate your motor control. And it may seem harmless, but the fact that you're giving permission, it only takes that once.
for something to infiltrate. Oh, you gave me permission to touch you. You gave me permission to use your motor skills. I can come back again and do the same thing. That's where the danger is.
Let's take a couple more calls if we have time. Mike in Houston, Texas. Mike, thanks for calling. Go ahead.
Hey, George, it's such an honor to speak to you and Keith as well. And first of all, I want to say, George, don't do the Ouija board.
No, don't worry about that.
That's something that that's a place I would not go. So I was just hoping that you don't follow through on that. But anyways, quickly, I just wanted to ask Keith, since I've been a big-time follower, reader of his second cousin, H.P. Lovecraft, if he knew much about Lovecraft's life, and in that HPL used to have these vivid dreams, you would say demonic, and they very much influenced his writing. And, you know, I mean, they were very, very much a part of his, his Cthulhu, mythos and so forth. So I was wondering if you think that maybe he might have been demonically influenced or not so much possessed, but had any effect on his writings. And then I've also had some personal experiences, both early on in my childhood and especially recently, where I've had some demonic oppression. Just as a matter of fact, I was taking this medication, and I had the experience in attacked by a demonic dog, a demon, and as well as a demon. And I've had to invoke the name of Jesus in order to get these things to leave as they were attacking me. And I was in kind of a semi-dream state. So I was wondering what you might recommend, reading the Psalms or possibly.
All right, and the best thing we'll have to do for that is you're going to have to email Keith through his website, nearparanormal.com, because, Keith, we are out of time. I want to thank you for being on the program, Keith.
You're welcome, and thank you for all you do, George, bringing awareness.
Absolutely.
To the world.
Let's stay in touch with each other. For Dan Galante, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean Laudasaur, Stephanie Smith, Chris Borles, George Knapp, and Art Bell, I'm George Norrie, somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. We'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.